In the interest of everybody's time, it is 6:30. Good evening, everyone. My name is Lisa Bickford. I'm the Vice Chair of the Planning Commission. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for this evening. Please remember to turn off your cell phones, Commissioner Cantrell. And the parking validation machine is for the garage under City Hall is located near the entrance. We still don't have a flag in this room, so we are going to pass on that. I'd like to do roll call. Commissioner Borosio?
Here.
Commissioner Bandal?
Here.
Commissioner Cantrell?
Here.
Commissioner Cow?
Here.
Commissioner Casey?
Here.
Commissioner Escobar?
Here.
Commissioner DeWin is not here. Commissioner Oliverio?
Here.
Commissioner Young is not here. Chair Rosario is not here. Myself, Vice Chair Bickford, I am here. Thank you very much. I'm going to read to you the summary of hearing procedures. If you want to address the commission, please fill out a speaker card located on the table at the back. And deposit the completed card up here somewhere, and we will take it. There are also speaker cards. Well, there are only speaker cards back there, sorry. The procedure for this hearing is as follows. After staff's presentation, applicants and or appellants may make up to a 5-minute presentation. During the public comment period, the chair will call out names on the submitted speaker cards in the order received for those members of the public who attend in person. As your name is called, line up in the front with the microphone. Generally, each speaker will be given up to 2 minutes for public testimony, and speakers using a translator will have up to 4 minutes. At the discretion of the chair, the time allotted for each speaker may be changed depending on the number of items on the agenda, number of speakers, and other factors. Speakers using a translator will have doubled the time allotted. After the public testimony, the applicant and or appellant may make closing remarks for up to an additional 5 minutes. Planning commissioners may ask questions of the speakers. Response to commissioner questions will not reduce the speaker's time allowance. The public hearing will then be closed and the Planning Commission will take action on the item. The Planning Commission may request staff to respond to the public testimony, ask staff questions, and discuss the item. If you challenge these land use decisions in court, you may be limited to raising only those issues you or someone else raised at this public hearing or in written correspondence delivered to the city at or prior to the public hearing. The Planning Commission's actions on rezonings, prezonings, general plan amendments, and code amendments is only advisory to the City Council. The City Council will hold public hearings on these items. Section 20.120.400 of the Municipal Code provides the procedures for legal protest to the City Council on rezonings and prezonings. The Planning Commission's actions on conditional use permits is appealable to the City Council in accordance with Section 20.100.220 of the Municipal Code. Agendas and all staff reports for this meeting can be accessed on the City's website. Before we begin, I want to remind the Planning Commission members and members of the public to follow a code of conduct at meetings. This includes commenting on the specific agenda item only and addressing the full body. Public speakers will not engage in a conversation with the commissioners or staff. All members of the Planning Commission, staff, and the public are expected to refrain from abusive language. Repeated failure to comply with the code of conduct, which will disturb, disrupt, or impede the orderly conduct of this meeting, may result in removal from the meeting. This meeting of the Planning Commission will now come to order. And I will move to Section 2, Public Comment. Public comments to the Planning Commission are non-agendized items. Please fill out a speaker card and give it to the technician. Each member of the public may address the Commission for up to 2 minutes. The Commission cannot take any formal action without the item being properly noticed and placed on an agenda. In response to public comment, the Planning Commission is limited to the following options. Responding to statements made or questions posed by members of the public, requesting staff to report back on a matter at a subsequent meeting, directing staff to place the item on a future agenda. Staff, do we have any speakers for public comments? Don't see any. We're going to go to Section 3, Deferrals and Removals from the calendar. Any item scheduled for hearing this evening for which deferral is being requested will be taken out of order to be heard first on the matter of deferral or removal. Staff will provide any update on the items for which deferral and removal is being requested. If you want to change any of the deferral dates recommended or speak to the question of deferring or removing these or any other items, you should say so at this time. Do we have any? No? Okay. So item four is the consent calendar. There will be no separate discussion of individual consent calendar items as they're considered to be routine and will be adopted by one motion. If a member of the commission requests debate, separate vote, or recusal on a particular item, that item may be removed from the consent calendar by the chair and considered separately. The public may comment on the entire consent calendar and any items removed from the consent calendar by the chair. Yes.
It's a lot of meat to understand.
Okay, so we've had a request to remove the particular agenda item from the consent calendar. And we were gonna get the presentation anyway, right? Yes? So we're removing from the consent calendar, so we will move it into our regular session. But I think there's still, are there notes for the consent calendar? Minutes, yes. Yes, okay.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Oliverio and a second from Commissioner Bandal. I'll go through. Commissioner Barocio?
Yes.
Commissioner Bandal?
Yes.
Commissioner Cantrell?
Yes.
Commissioner Cal?
Yes.
Commissioner Casey?
Yes.
Commissioner Escobar?
Yes.
Commissioner Oliverio?
Yes.
And myself, yes. Commissioner Rosario, Commissioner Nguyen, and Commissioner Young are absent. So that carries. I think at this point, we will move to our presentation. Give me just one sec. So we'll move to the public hearing portion. Generally, the public hearing items are considered by the Planning Commission in the order in which they appear on the agenda. We only have one agenda item, so I'll call it out in a minute. Please be advised that the Commission may take items out of order to facilitate the agenda, such as to accommodate significant public testimony, or may defer discussion of items to later agendas. The item for discussion today is PP 25-007, an ordinance of the City of San Jose amending Title 20. And I'm not going to read all of the rest because we're going to have a presentation on it. Staff?
Thank you, Commissioners. We'll start the presentation momentarily.
And if whoever is speaking could bring the mic forward so it's the audio is clear for the recording. Thank you.
Okay, can you hear me? Okay. Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Brent Carvalho. And I am joined by my colleague and co-project manager, Rena Ong, as well as supervising planner, Aparna Ancola. I will provide a brief overview of agenda item 5B, file number PP25-007, state law maintenance update. Also, just wanted to note that to date, we have not received any public comments on this proposed ordinance. Move to slide two. There are four recent state laws that are effective as of January 2026 and are addressed as part of this ordinance update. First, we have Assembly Bill 1061, which further expands SB 9 provisions to allow subdivisions on historic properties within the R1 single-family zoning district. SB 9, effective since January 2022, allows subdivisions of single-family zoned properties and previously excluded properties in historic districts from these provisions. Next, we have Assembly Bill 752, which makes child daycare centers a permitted use if they are co-located, a as part of a multifamily housing development. And then we have Assembly Bill 1154 and Senate Bill 543, which include changes to existing state law for junior accessory dwelling units, commonly referred to as JADUs. In addition to implementing recent state laws, this ordinance update includes the city's housing element action item P-41 to remove subjective language references for planning permit findings and to replace them with objective standards. Additionally, there are some minor changes to improve clarity and correct past errors, which are included as part of this update. So we'll go ahead and start with AB 1061. Assembly Bill 1061 is a recent bill that addresses duplexes and subdivisions on historic properties and further expands on SB 9, which was approved in January 2022. The state law allowed property owners to build duplexes and to subdivide their properties if they were zoned for R1 single-family zoning districts. Previously, SB 9 excluded all properties located in historic districts from ministerial approvals for duplexes or subdivisions, also referred to as urban lot splits. However, the recent state law modifies that exemption. Now, instead of prohibiting ministerial approval for duplexes across historic districts, the exemption has been narrowed to only apply to properties which have a historic designation, such as historic landmark. Similarly, with regards to subdivisions or urban lot splits, the previous regulations prohibited subdivisions in historic districts. Now the restriction has been narrowed to only prohibit subdivisions on properties designated as historic landmarks and to prohibit lot splits which require demolition or alteration of contributing structures in historic districts, or any existing exterior structural wall or structure located within a historic district. To help understand how many properties this might affect here in San Jose, there are about 2,114 sites in the R1 zoning district that have a historic resource status. This amounts to roughly 0.01% of the total number of properties zoned for single-family homes within the city limits. To address this update, we will make some revisions to Part 9.5 of Chapter 20.30, which is the Residential Zoning District chapter. And now we'll talk about Assembly Bill 752. This is targeted specifically to make daycare centers a permitted use when they are co-located within a multifamily housing development. Additionally, this state law prohibits local governments from applying different development standards for the daycare center than those standards that would apply to the multifamily housing development. Our current local zoning regulations would typically require a discretionary special use permit, which includes public hearing and community meeting as part of the approval process, resulting in higher costs and extended timelines to process the approval. To address this update, we will add a new use called child daycare co-located with multifamily housing development to the use tables for a variety of zoning districts which permit multifamily housing development. These include the multifamily district in the residential zone, commercial pedestrian, commercial neighborhood, commercial general in the commercial zones, urban village, mixed use commercial, mixed use neighborhood, urban residential, transit residential in the urban village and mixed use zones, and DC and DCNT1 in the downtown zones, and MSG and MSC in the pedestrian-oriented zones. These are fairly small changes. However, because the use tables are large, this update makes up a significant portion of the ordinance. Now I'm going to talk about Assembly Bill 1154 and Senate Bill 543, which amend regulations related to junior accessory dwelling units. There are two significant changes in this update. The first is related to owner occupancy, and the second is related to the minimum length of time for rentals. Previous JADU law required owner occupancy. However, the new state law includes changes to the owner occupancy requirement. Now, if the JADU has its own separate bathroom facilities, not shared by the rest of the house, the owner of the property does not need to live on site. If the bathroom facilities for the JADU are shared with the primary unit, then the owner of the property is required to live on site. The only exception to this requirement is if the property is owned by a government agency, land trust, or housing organization. AB 1154 also updated the minimum length of time that a JADU can be rented. Previously, there was no prohibition on short-term rentals. However, under the new state law, the rental of a JADU must be for a minimum of 30 days or more. Effectively, this update means that JADUs cannot be used as short-term rentals or vacation properties. Next, I'll explain the update related to the city's housing element strategy P-41, which is to review and revise subjective language used in standard permit findings, including site development permits, conditional use permits, special use permits, or planned development permits. This update is aimed at revising subjective standards in order to replace them with objective standards. The proposed amendments aim to improve transparency and predictability in the development review process by establishing measurable criteria for evaluating housing projects. Additionally, this update includes minor maintenance and cleanup to improve clarity or correct previous errors within the code. This includes two notable updates: removal of the word overlay in chapter 20.70, which is the downtown zoning district chapter. And then a minor update related to ADU condominium requirements in section 20.80.185 of chapter 20.80 to add a reference to the California Office of Real Estate. All other text-based updates are aimed at improving clarity and ensuring conformance with state law. So this ordinance will be discussed during three public hearings. We're here today, May 6th, at Planning Commission. The Airport Land Use Commission meeting is scheduled for May 27th, and the City Council hearing is scheduled for June 2nd. This concludes staff's presentation, and staff is available if you have any comments or questions.
On AB 1061, so example, Palm Haven, Eichler's that have historic designation by the city, as well as Nagley Park, exempt or not exempt? Or does it depend on that house is really 120 years old?
Thank you, Commissioner. I would like to clarify that the state historic resources inventory does not actually clarify which properties are on it. And at this time, we do identify the National Register, the State California Register, the Historic Landmarks San Jose, all of these items as requiring a discretionary approval, a discretionary permit approval. So that would be a single family house permit for the National and the California Register properties. And for the city landmark, we do require a historic preservation.
So then, meaning it'll go to director's hearing? You said discretionary. So is that not ministerial, but...
The single family house permit can be, it is going to be an administrative approval.
And then staff will contemplate the true historic nature of the unit, but there will never be a public hearing for it.
There would not be a public hearing.
Okay. Yeah. And then staff's going to rely on all the criteria you mentioned
objective
prior.
Standards, yes.
And then is your viewpoint that if it meets one or more than one of those qualifications, then it's denied?
So because if it's an administrative process, there would be no appeal to that process. I would look to the attorneys if they have any other comments.
So then I think hearing what you're saying is then there is no protection for historically designated house.
Because based on the R1 single family criteria that is available in AB 1061, yes, we cannot prohibit any changes, except that they cannot demolish the 25%, and there are, again, strict guidelines as to what they could achieve on that property.
Got it. And then, just so help me, so they would need, and maybe I missed it, you said keeping 25% of the structure, so is this keeping the facade and then tearing out the back?
That is correct, yes.
And then, but on a subdivided SB9 lot, how would that work?
So they would pretty much not touch the property because they are required to adhere to the SB9 setbacks.
Uh-huh.
So there would be no demolition or alteration of that existing residence. So any remainder parcel in the back would be converted to a SB9 second subdivision.
So really the subdividing is not seen from the street?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Cantrell.
Can we unpack the changes that are related to subjective and objective review? What are we talking about? What specifically is changed?
So the objective design standards would be specific as related to the setbacks. They have to adhere to the setbacks and the height requirements. We cannot use language as to that it has to match or without giving the exact criteria. We cannot use massing or just comparison between like the materials. So that would be the objective criteria, as in the setbacks, the height, and we are requiring that they would match the overall appearance, but not the massing and the specifics of that.
So in practice, can we be specific what that might mean in real life? What is allowed, what isn't?
So at this point, we have to provide a 4-foot minimum setback if we were to subdivide the property. So the rear setback of that existing residence is not going to be tampered with. So that is a minimum setback. It has to be smaller, and it has to be to the rear of the property so that the primary dwelling in the front is going to be of a larger dimension than the unit in the back. So the unit in the back is essentially more of a secondary in nature. So that is the only objective standards that we can apply.
So, okay, maybe I'm not asking the right question. I'm actually talking about are you talking about ADUs specifically right now?
So ADUs do have the state law exemption. So ADUs are not part of any of the considerations. Okay. But for the second unit, they'll have to be smaller. They'll have to be to the back of the primary residence in front.
Apologies. Commissioner Cantrell, are you asking about the use permits?
I'm not talking about the specific ADUs. I'm talking about the general changes.
Objective standards use permits. And right. How they pertain to residential uses. Maybe staff can answer that question instead.
Yeah. So the specific use permits for HB permits, is that?
No. The ordinance change that removes subjective discretionary standards for use permits.
That's correct.
So conditional use permits, special use permits.
That's correct.
And only objective standards would be applied. Maybe staff can expand on that.
Yes, that's correct. So we are referring to the P41. And I did go into the AB 1061 earlier, but yes, the P41, which is the historic, which is the housing element compliance. So what we are trying to do is identify all of those, that language which we had in the code earlier, which is considered as subjective, and then we are only requiring that the permits adhere to the health and safety standards, to building and fire regulations, and we are not using terms such as it shall be harmonious and such terms. So that is the part that we are excluding.
So it is specific and not...
That's correct.
Like you said, harmonious, whatever that might mean.
Yes.
It seems hard to enforce anyway.
That is not, yes, that is not objective.
Yes. Okay.
There used to be conditions such as a harmonious, aesthetically pleasing, you know, matches the general character of the neighborhood, things like that. Those kinds of discretionary language were removed from this ordinance.
Okay.
For residential only, the discretionary standards can still apply to non-residential projects.
Okay. So things like the setbacks, the standards for general design that are enforceable will continue.
Yes, absolutely.
But you can't use grassy language to say what you want it to look like.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
Commissioner Bandal.
Thank you. And thank you for the presentation. Why does this go to the airport next?
Because this is a zoning code change and these projects are referred to the Airport Land Use Commission.
Thank you.
Just generally speaking, if there's any land use changes that are within the airport's area of influence, then the Airport Land Use Commission has to approve those changes before they can come into effect.
Makes sense.
Generally speaking.
So has Landmarks reviewed the changes to the historic communities or anything?
Yes, they're going to review that entire ordinance.
Okay, package. So they will get a review.
Yes.
Also. Okay.
Is that review planned somewhere between now and June 2nd?
Yes, we would typically receive a determination from ALUC around May 20th, a week before the actual meeting.
I think they're asking about the Historic Landmarks Commission.
Yes.
If that commission will review this ordinance and provide comments.
So the Historic Landmark Commission is not part of this review cycle because the current ordinance is just adhering to the state law compliance.
We don't have a choice.
Yeah.
It is mandatory compliance.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Yeah, as the weather keeps changing in Sacramento and there's no assembly bills and Senate bills coming out, I think it's important to align. So this is work that's required. So thank you for your guys' effort.
So the change in the language, what drove that? The change in the types of requirements we could set, you know, using standard language instead of
the inability
speeching.
To enforce subjective.
So is that what it is? The ability to enforce it? Or?
Yeah, I can speak to that because it was part of the housing element six cycle process, and I was one of the staff persons working on that. Our HCD reviewer looked at what we usually do, how we approve projects, so they're called findings, and I think across the board they were suggesting to many jurisdictions you can't use stuff like aesthetically harmonious, you know, subjective language because beauty in the eye of the beholder or whatever, right? I can have a difference of opinion than someone else, and it's really in line with SB 330, the Housing Accountability Act, like how we review these projects has to be objective and measurable, and how do you measure harmony or aesthetics, right? Yeah. There's no sort of bar standard there.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've been using character of the community
yes.
to stop a lot of things.
There's
for
morals
a long time.
Here that we crossed out in wealth, general welfare, yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Commissioner Brosio, did you have something?
Yes, thank you. I don't know if we can move the slides. Can we go to slide 4? Awesome, thank you. As that's being pulled up, can someone give the current scenario? Like, what's a real world example of current practice? And if all goes through, how would the daycare industry here in San Jose change because of Assembly Bill 752?
Thank you, Commissioner. So the daycare centers currently require a special use permit for approval, and that is a discretionary permit. The current state law requires that we eliminate all restrictions to permitting process, licensing, and therefore we are going to be including this as a permitted use in the current tables if you're co-located with the multifamily housing. In 2020, the SB 234 already revised the housing of the daycare requirements from a small daycare to a large daycare. That became a incidental residential use, if you will. And what we have today is just an extension of that family, larger family daycare to a daycare center. However, all of these are regulated by the California Department of Social Service. They do require licensing and operational requirements, and which are very stringent. And at this point, they have requirements such as minimum space required per child, indoor and outdoor, like 35 square feet. And if it's outside, it's 75 square feet. And they would have to comply to those standards. So it's not that we have absolutely no standards to enforce. It would be enforced by the licensing agency itself. And there's also requirement about the ratio of the number of kids to the person who is going to be monitoring them for all the age groups. So there are two components. One is the family daycare that stays intact. There is no change to that, but the daycare center is now folded in as a incidental residential use. So the only change that we have today is that it would be permitted as part of the multifamily housing development. There is not going to be any additional development standards, such as like height restrictions, that we wouldn't apply to the base multifamily zoning district. So we would not impose any additional requirements except what we have already have, and the remainder requirements are going to be imposed by the licensing itself.
Okay. So is the current practice a daycare center wants to enter a commercial area, or is this for things to be more aligned if they want to go into a residential area?
So this particular state law only enforces for a multifamily if it is co-located within. This was identified as an urgent need for multifamily so that they have access to a daycare facility at source, if you will, where the families live. And therefore, it is limited to the multifamily development itself, and in addition to that, to any community centers or libraries. We already allow in as an incidental use for a place of an assembly use right now, and this would be the second use that we would allow based on the state law requirement.
Okay, and can you explain what constitutes a multifamily housing?
So the state defines all these terms, and co-located would be within the premises or within the building itself. And the multifamily building, we are required to have a density of 5 units or more. So that is the requirement right now.
Okay, so we're talking about an area or a unit or a part, I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. So are we talking about that there used to be a lot of red tape for a daycare center to go into like more of an apartment?
An apartment, so a condo complex, anything right. That's multifamily.
Okay.
So some of the outreach that we did, we heard that it needs to sort of be from the beginning of the development process for the housing development in order for a lot of daycares to be successful, based on a lot of things like the plumbing that's required, the outdoor space that's required. So it really needs to be involved from the beginning of the design process. And so by making it permitted, it takes away the special use permit process that would have
lengthened the process potentially, and it allows it to be more successful. It's probably unlikely that we'll see these daycare centers moving into existing buildings because of how many modifications they'll actually need to make to the structure in order to meet state laws. So hopefully maybe that helps kind of some of the framing.
I would also like to add that at this time, any apartment or a residential facility can have up to 8 kids. They can run a small daycare from home. And they could also run a slightly larger daycare, which is between 8 and 14 kids. So this is a by right use at this point. So what this state law does is within, let's say, an apartment complex, they might convert one of the units to a daycare center, and they would have to comply with all of the requirements for licensing for the daycare center.
Okay.
If I can just
make sense. Thank you.
Yeah, council member, I was going to say it's more of future projects, allowing them so that they can skip a special use permit. And I will give two examples. We actually have one at Tamian Station. It's an affordable housing development with roughly like 3,000 square feet of daycare uses. That was a ministerial project, so they actually avoided the whole site development permit and the hearing process. And then there was another one entitled, I think, Under Construction off West San Carlos, same thing, multifamily, and then a daycare center on the ground floor. So they're not necessarily knocking down the doors because, again, to Brent's point, you need to have that sort of idea for a daycare center, I think, right at the beginning when you're developing your new project.
It's also to eliminate a local city or town opposing a project because of the daycare center, right? This would seem to be like some cities that aren't necessarily cooperative would use the daycare center as an excuse not to approve the project. But with this, it wouldn't have the problem.
I can see that for other cities.
Yeah, not us. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So because it would be like that discretionary permit, the special use. Yeah.
So other cities like Anaheim, they have already used a process very similar to what we are proposing to implement. And I do think that with this particular bill, I mean, it just makes it a lot easier for families to access the daycare where they live.
Yeah.
Commissioner Cal. Sorry.
Thank you. No, I just wanted to thank Ruth and I don't see your name tags up there, but the staff for your clarity. Thank you.
Commissioner Cal.
Yeah, I want to thank Commissioner Borrosio for bringing this up. As a dad of a 9-month-old right now, daycare is definitely something I'm thinking about. And I wanted to dig in just for one moment the idea of an existing apartment complex. So I actually live in an apartment complex. So would AB 752 then apply to existing apartment complexes? Because I was listening to the way you responded to the questions, and it sounds like it's more for new development, but how would this apply to existing developments or existing projects like mine?
So I think with the newer buildings and facilities, I think you would have more of an opportunity to include and to also conform to the regulations set by the state and also the CDSS licensing. But if it is an existing, then you would be able to do a small and large daycare at any time. I mean, any apartment can do it right now. But if you were to do a daycare center, then you would have to comply with all of those restrictions which are imposed, yeah.
Okay.
But you could do it.
Understood. Thank you so much for clarifying. I have a lot more homework to do on this front then.
Any further questions from the commission? Okay.
I was going to say motion to approve. Second.
Chair. We do need to have some public comment on this.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I don't have any public comment cards. Is there any public comment in the room this evening? Thank you. I bypassed that because I didn't have any cards. Sorry. Okay. Well, thank you for attending, members of the public. I have a motion from
Young.
Commissioner Casey, Young, Commissioner Casey, and a second from. Who was the second from? Commissioner Oliverio seconded. I'm just going to read this just to make sure. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission recommend that the City Council take all of the following actions. Consider adopting the determination of consistency to the envisioned San Jose 2040 General Plan Final Program Environmental Impact Report, Resolution Number 76041. Supplemental Environmental Impact Report, Resolution 77617, and Supplemental Environmental Impact Report 2023 to 2031 Housing Element Update, Resolution 2023-262, and addenda thereto in accordance with the California Environmental Quality Act as amended, and an ordinance of the City of San Jose amending Title 20 of the San Jose Municipal Code to amend all of those various parts. I'm not going to read them all. I don't think anybody wants to hear me talk that much. So we have a motion and a second, and let's go ahead and do a vote. Commissioner Barocio?
Yes.
Commissioner Bandal?
Yes.
Commissioner Cantrell?
Yes.
Commissioner Cal?
Yes.
Commissioner Casey?
Yes.
Commissioner Escobar?
Yes.
Commissioner Nguyen is not here. Commissioner Oliverio?
Yes.
Commissioner Young is not here, Chair Rosario is not here, and I am a yes. That passes. Thank you very much. And we're going to move to Section 7. Don't confuse me. Referrals from City Council, boards, commissions, and other agencies. Any referrals? No referrals. Good in the Welfare, Section 8. Do we have a report from City Council?
Yes, thank you. We so just a few updates. April 28th, City Council heard the site development permit and vesting tentative map at Camden Avenue and Singletree Way. This was for 108 residential units, 32 three-story buildings that came to Planning Commission, I believe, a week or two before that. The City Council voted to approve that item. And then yesterday, May 5th, there was an amendment to an agreement with Clear Channel Outdoor for large format digital signage on city-owned property located at Mayberry and West Mission Street, and City Council approved that as well. In terms of future updates on council, May 19th, the City Council will hear the CEQA streamlining items. I believe this has already come to Planning Commission, the standard environmental conditions and handbook. And then I'll just jump into commission calendar and study session. So there is a general plan four-year review task force meeting May 20th on missing middle. And then the week after, May 27th, there is no regular meeting, but there will be a study session at 5 on the 2026 General Plan Annual Report. And it'll be here in the wings. And that's it.
Thank you. I have a question. I saw that in the notes to the commissioners, the 7 Top Golf came back through, and it is going, it's an SB 35 now, bypassing the commission. Can you say anything more about that? Do you know?
Which one?
7 Top Golf Drive.
Alviso.
In Alviso, yeah. Anybody know?
It's not one that I have information on currently, and I don't know that we can.
It came to us 2-3 months ago, and we just got an email to the commissioners saying that or maybe it was only directed to me because I care about this project particularly, but saying that it will bypass the Planning Commission because it is an SB 35 and 100% affordable.
If that is the case, I think I have heard that it was converted to an SB 35 application, but I can confirm and follow up with the commission.
Thank you.
And what time is the study session on the
27th? 5.
5 p.m. 5 to 6. 20th is the same, yes.
Okay. And anything else for the public record?
No, I'm sorry, the 27th meeting is canceled, but we're going to have a special session.
study session, yes, on the general plan annual report.
Thank you. Sorry, the meeting on the 20th is at 6:30.
Oh, it is?
That's the four-year
task force.
Task force.
Oh, yeah, he was asking about the 27th.
That was the 20th.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
He asked about the 27th.
27th is 5.
27th is 5. The 20th is 6:30.
Yeah. Okay. Sweet.
Everybody got it?
Got it now.
Okay. This meeting of the Planning Commission is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Second.